ओम हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम ओम सदा शिव समारंभां शंकराचार्य मध्यमां अस्मदाचार्य पर्यन्तां सुधर्मास्ते मयि संतो ते मयि संतो ओम शांति 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 ही। सो वी सॉ द लास्ट क्लास थर्ड मंत्र सेकंड सेक्शन ऑफ केन उपनिषद वेर इन उपनिषद्स द केन उपनिषद itself reproduced its paradoxical teaching of this teacher and the student's paradoxical expression of his understanding. It said, Brahman is unknown for those who know, and Brahman is known for those who do not know. And for reinforcement, the second line also conveyed the same. Those who know, for those who know, Brahman is unknown. For those who do not know, Brahman is known. What does it mean here? For people, Brahman is never an object of knowledge. Therefore, those who say they know Brahman, for them Brahman becomes an object of knowledge, which means they really they do not know Brahman. Whereas the wise people who know Brahman, for them Brahman is known not as an object of knowledge, but as the very Swarupam of the subject, as the subject of knowledge. This is what is said here. And even the third mantra, the first sentence and the second sentence convey the same thing. And first Shankaracharya said, repetition is always for reinforcement. That's how we take it in Upanishads. Later on, otherwise, he concluded his commentary on his third mantra saying, you can take it as another meaning also. What can be taken as another meaning? The second line, which is said to be repetition of what is being said in the first line. That, yasya amatam tasya matam, yasya matam sahana veda. Same meaning is conveyed where? The next sentence. Avijnatam vijanatam, avijnatam avijanatam. But the second line can be taken as what? Taken as, as an example. Example for what? It's an example which we have in day-to-day life. That is our experience of dream. So I used two technical terms. Sadhyam, what is the other word I used? The conclusion, what you arrive at by analyzing the example is called sadhyam. Conclusion. Isn't it? And the first you take it. Hetuhu. Because the word is there itself. Atava hetvartaha, isn't it? The second line should be taken as a hetuhu. If you take it, the second line as a hetuhu, then first line as the sadhyam, the conclusion, then that becomes what now? The second meaning, for second explanation of this mantra, which means you don't need to talk about the repetition. So, what is the hetuhu? I'm repeating just to bring you back to the next mantra. What is the hetuhu? What is the sadhyam? Hetuhu I said, now here it is given reasoning. Something is given, some reasoning, you are helped to reason. So what are, how are you going to reason? You need something. This example is given. You take your own dream example or experience of your dream and you analyze the dream experience. So analysis of the dream experience is what? The here given as an example for your reasoning. When you are, or not only you, for anyone, when a person is objectifying the dream, objectifying the dream means what? The person who is dreaming, isn't it? For him, the dreamer dreamt, isn't it? For him, the dreamt world is what? For the one who is dreaming, he is objectifying the dream means, for him, dream is an object of knowledge. Isn't it? And the object of knowledge. And who, then the dreamer is also there. The division also is there. But when he wakes up, actually, on waking up, as a waker, for him, dreamer and the dreamt, both are what? Even the dreamer. What is the adhishtanam of the dream universe? Adhishtanam, the substratum, which lends existence to both the dreamer and the dreamt, is the swarup, the truth, reality of the dreamer and the dreamt. What is the truth of the dreamer and the dreamt? The truth of the dreamer, the truth of the dreamt, without whom there cannot be dreamer or the dreamt. Is it? That reality of the whole dream experience. Dream experience implies what? Dream experience implies dreamer and the dreamt. So the reality of the whole dream experience, without whose presence dream experience is not possible, which means without whose presence dreamer and the dreamt are not possible. Is it? That reality is the waker. And what is, who is the waker here? Waker is the very swarupam of the dreamer. On the waker being the swarup of the dreamer, then the for the entire dreamt also swarup is what? Same waker only. On waking up from sleep, for the waker, the whole experience is what? Is an object? Not object, isn't it? Everything is very self. Is it clear now? Similarly, for the one who is for the ignorant person, when he is objectifying this, the for him, Brahman is an object of knowledge. When he is objectifying this universe, when he is objectifying this universe, for him, what is Brahman? No, for him, the Brahman is object of knowledge. If Brahman is an object of knowledge, which means he has not, he should say what? You see anything in the world? I see only Brahman. And what is that Brahman? When can you say, I see only Brahman? All that you see is only Brahman. When can you say? Only if Brahman is swarupam of the very subject. The Brahman, if you recognize Brahman, what is Brahman for the wise person? Brahman is the very truth of the knower, subject of knowledge. And once the Brahman is the very truth of one's own swarupam, then the whole, all that is, here is what? Only Brahma. Therefore, if a person for the wise person, who for whom Brahman is not an object of knowledge, in the same way, for him the whole Brahman is the very swarupam of the subject. Is it clear? I explained already last class. And for the one, if there is a person who says, for whom the Brahman is an object of knowledge, which means he does not know Brahman, sahana veda. Why? Because still object to him means he does not know Brahman, because for him Brahman is an object of knowledge. Okay. Therefore, that's what is said here. So we take the first sentence as the sadhyam. Okay, that's what is very clear. Now we have to enter into the fourth mantra. And before we read the fourth mantra, we have to see the introduction to the fourth mantra in the Bhashyam. Even though I touched last class, for the sake of just starting, let us read the Bhashyam part, which is an introduction to the fourth mantra. And what is being taught in the fourth mantra is taught, isn't it? There must be some Sishya, some disciple. No? Whatever has been said earlier. And then, there was some Sishya who wouldn't have understood what has been said in the previous mantra. He may have some vagueness, isn't it? So, for such a Sishya is going to ask some doubts, express his doubts. And therefore, to clear the doubts, the answer comes. Okay? There is possibility of having some doubts based on the teaching presented in the previous mantra. If those doubts come, then those doubts have to be cleared, for which you need an answer that has to be given, is it, in the form of teaching. The teaching for those doubts, clearing those doubts is given. The teaching is given as the fourth mantra. Okay, so fourth mantra is the answer for the possible doubts which can arise based on the understanding of the third mantra. Is it clear? Yeah. And I tell you one thing, this fourth mantra is the most important, most significant mantra. Like how I said in our Mandukya class, seventh mantra is the most important, in the entire Vedantic literature. Like this Kena Upanishad mantra, this fourth mantra also is the most significant, most important, and most important in the entire Vedantic literature. Yes. And especially the first quarter of the mantra is the most important. If you see the first quarter of the mantra, Pratibodha Viditam Matam, finished. That is the most important part of the mantra. And what about the rest of the mantra? The rest of the mantra is only actually extension of the same teaching. Okay. Why this teaching comes here? We'll see here. Avijnatam Vijanatam. Avijnatam Vijanatam. Vijanan Purushaha means the wise person here. Vijanatam means for those people who know the truth, the reality. For the wise people, Vijanata means for the wise people. Avijnatam, Brahman, the reality, is unknown. Unknown means, is it? Vijanatam, avijnatam. For the wise people, Brahman is unknown means, for wise people, Brahman is the unknown. Which means, it is not an object of knowledge. If it is not an object of knowledge, what does it mean? Brahman is unknown means, it does not mean Brahman is not known for the wise people. Generally, unknown means we take it as what? Not known, isn't it? Not known means if they do not know Brahman, and how can we call them wise? Only if they know the reality, then they can be known as wise. Then they are Vijanantaha Purushaha. But we call them wise Vijanantaha, wise people. But still for them, Brahman is unknown means, what does it mean? This sentence implies, Brahman is unknown for the wise means, Brahman is not an object of knowledge. They know Brahman not as an object, but as the subject of knowledge, as the very swarupam of the knower, the subject of knowledge. Is it clear? Iti avadhrutam. Avadhrutam means what? It is very clearly, it has been understood. Iti avadhrutam. Avadhrutam means it has been ascertained. Avadhrutam is a past passive participle of avadharayati. Okay, avadharayati means, is it? Ascertains. So, avadhritam has been ascertained. It has been, this has been ascertained. What has been said in the previous mantra? That wise people do not know Brahma. Which means Brahman is unknown for wise people. Isn't it? It's understood very clearly. Which means Brahman is an object of knowledge for wise people. Thereafter, the doubt comes. Now, next sentence is what? The doubt is expressed in the next sentence. Yadi, look at this. Brahma atyantameva avijnatam. Yadi, Brahma atyantameva avijnatam. Yadi, if Brahma, the reality, atyantameva avijnatam, completely unknown at all. Atyantameva avijnatam. Brahman is completely unknown, isn't it? Not known at all. If Brahman is not known at all, that atyantam is not known at all. If Brahman is not known at all, for whom? For laukikanam, for vijanatam. Okay? For the wise people, you have to understand there. Vijanatam, for the wise people, if Brahman is not known at all, then there are ordinary people in the world, laukikaha. Laukikaha means what? Loke vidyamanaha janaha. There are ordinary, simple people in the world who do not even know there is something called reality implied by the term Brahma. That I have to know that reality implied by the term Brahma. And by knowing that Brahman, I can discover my freedom. So I have Purushartha Nischaya. I am a Mumukshu. I am a Jignasu. No, I am totally committed to the pursuit of the end called Moksha. Therefore, and that moksha, what I'm committed to, is in the form of knowledge of the reality. Therefore, I'm committed to the pursuit of knowledge. I'm a jignasu. I'm desirous of knowing because I'm desirous of freedom. I'm a mokshu. I'm desirous of moksha because, therefore what? I'm desirous of knowing. I'm a jignasu. Therefore what? And then I need to know the reality. Therefore I want to study the shastram, which is a means of knowledge. Is it? How many people are there in the world like that? No. There's so many people who would not have even heard the word shastram, who would not have known the importance of studying the shastram, who are completely illiterate regarding the study of the shastram. Completely ignorant, novice. There is no purusharth nischeha, there is no commitment to the pursuit of knowledge, there is no interest in moksha, there is no interest in simple people. The world is full of such people only. So, laukikaha. Okay? For them also, Brahman is unknown. Isn't it? You can say simple novice. Brahman is unknown for the simple people. The ordinary simple people also do not know Brahman. So Brahman is unknown for simple, ordinary people who are not interested in Brahman at all. And there are wise people for whom also Brahman is unknown. Why? Shruti says in the previous mantra, Brahman is unknown for wise people. Vijanatam avijnatam. Vijanatam avijnatam. Brahman is unknown for the wise. So Brahman is unknown for whom also? For the most of the people in the world, ordinary simple people who are not interested in Brahman at all. Isn't it? For them all, Brahman is unknown. That means, laukikanam brahmavidancha avisheshaha praptaha. Now, laukikanam and brahmavidancha avisheshaha praptaha. There is no difference. Wise people are as good as ordinary ignorant people. So, avisheshaha means what now? Visheshaha means bhedaha. Avisheshaha means abhedaha. Isn't it? Therefore, there is no distinction. So, wise and the illiterate are non-distinguishable. So, non-distinguishability of the wise and the illiterate is now mentioned by the word avisheshaha. Then avisheshaha. Is it clear now? Therefore, prapta avisheshaha praptaha. Come on, now they're all same. Praptaha means what we have arrived at last. The wise and the ignorant, not ordinary ignorant people, okay, is completely who are not interested in Brahman, such ignorant people. There is no difference between the so-called, the really ignorant people who are uninterested in Brahman, who are least bothered about the Brahman, and who know Brahman, the wise people. There's no difference. Why? Because Brahman is unknown. How? Atyantameva avijnatam. Now, what is the question now? what is the difference, isn't it? Which means the so-called, the people, the ordinary people living in the world who are not exposed to the study of the Shastram, who are not interested in Shastram, they're also ignorant of Brahman, isn't it? And why the so-called wise people, for them also, Brahman is unknown. Which means, what is the difference here? Which means, for them generally unknown. For the ignorant people, Brahman is what? Generally unknown. Generally, ordinarily, Brahman is unknown for common people. Whereas here, for wise people, Brahman is unknown, specifically unknown. So, what is the difference between being specifically unknown and being ordinarily, generally unknown? Why you have to ask this question? Because because wise people are said to be liberated people, free people. We already know Brahman, the knowledge of Brahman liberates a person from bondage. Which means the wise people are said to be liberated and free people. Isn't it? That means this unknown, this specifically unknown Brahman for them. For ignorant people, Brahman is generally unknown. What is the difference? This is one question. Suppose now you all know the answer, isn't it? We know the answer. It is no such thing for them. The ordinary ignorant people do not know Brahman at all. Whereas, the wise people, when we say wise people do not know Brahman, means Brahman, not that they do not know Brahman, do not know Brahman as an object, but they know Brahman as the very subject. And having known Brahman as the very subject, they know Brahman is neither the subject nor the object also. Is it clear? They know this. Now next question comes. And he says, avijnatam vijanatam iticha paraspara viruddham. In the previous mantra, what has been said? The two contradictory statements. Isn't it? Brahman is unknown for those who know. Brahman is known for those who do not know. Knower is the one who knows. Non-knower is the one who does not know. But here, what does it say? Unknown for the knower, known for the non-knower. Is it? It's a contradictory statement. Isn't it? So he's asking. That means the wise person knows Brahman. Isn't it? Knows Brahman, which means a wise person knows Brahman. That's what is said there. So the question comes, katham tu tad brahma samyak viditam bhavati. Katham, how that tad brahma, that reality, that Brahman, the reality of the entire universe, that Brahman, samyak viditam bhavati. How does that Brahman becomes known clearly, not as an object, but as a subject of knowledge? If Brahman is not known for the wise means, Brahman is unknown for the wise means, Brahman is not an object of knowledge for the wise. Which means, if Brahman is not an object of knowledge for the wise, isn't it? How how to know that Brahman? How to clearly understand that Brahman? Samyag viditam bhavati. Brahma, how does Brahman becomes the known clearly? Is it? How does Brahman becomes known clearly? Samyag darshanam katham bhavati. Samyag viditam katham bhavati. To put it correctly, how to understand Brahman clearly? Why? Because whenever we talk about knowledge or knowing, generally in the world, whenever we talk about knowing, the knowing is always involves what? The knowing is knowing happens only through the process of objectification. Conventionally, knowing means what? Knowing is always through the process of objectification. But here, we had Brahman means. So without objectifying, without going through the process of objectification, how to arrive at Brahman clearly? Is it clear now? Nice question, isn't it? It's a very good question. See, if people really, this is what traditional teaching is very important. In Bhashyam, before entering into this verse, come on, if you want to know the reality, yes, we are talking about the knowledge of Brahman only, the knowledge of the reality only. But come on, avoid the very process of objectification. And without which, generally, conventionally, knowing is not possible, isn't it? The Shastra teaches you here, leave the whole thing. What is subtly said here? When you are asked to avoid the very process of objectification, involved in knowing anything, what do you have to understand here? You need not wait for any experience or new experience. Doesn't it subtly say this? You need not wait for any new experience. Suppose, is it clear now? It's a very important lesson here. Which means the student, first he sounded very vague. As though you all must have thought, my God, even we have understood this teaching so well. This boy is like this student sitting in front of Adishankar Bhagavatpada, now in his imaginary student, isn't it? And does he still have a doubt? Even we know, when we say Brahman is unknown for the known, unknown for those who know, means even we know very well, oh, Brahman is not an object of knowledge. The object of knowledge, isn't it? Whereas for whom Brahman is an object, they have not really understood Brahman, because Brahman is not available for objectification. We know this very well. But still the student raises this question, which means, he says, what is the difference between the ordinary ignorant people and for whom also Brahman is unknown, and for the wise people for who, isn't it? For them also, Brahman is unknown. Which means, what is implied here is, you have to avoid, in terms of knowledge of Brahman, with reference to knowledge of Brahman, you have to avoid the very process of objectification, which is involved in conventionally in knowing anything. Involving the process of objectification, the conventional method of is the process of objectification, involving that method, what is the way, what is the method, how can we have that Brahman known? Katham tad Brahma samyak viditam bhavati iti aha iti evam artham aha. Okay. For such a, is it clear now? For such a, the two questions came now. Now, he gives this answer. What is the answer here? The method of arriving at Brahman without involving the process of objectification involved in any conventional knowing, conventional in knowing anything. Is it clear or not? Okay. Now we have to go to the Pratibodha viditam matam amrutattvam hi vindate atmana vindate viryam vidyaya vindate amrutam. This, the teaching, the fourth mantra is given as answer to those questions. Pratibodha viditam. Okay. No, viditam. Viditam means known. Bodham, bodham, prati viditam. Pratibodha means bodham, bodham, prati viditam. The word prati is an indeclinable word which means every. Every. Suppose he said dine, dine, you can say prati dinam. Every day. And every week you want to say prati saptaham. Every month, prati masam. Prati varsham, every year. See, when you add this prati, if you add this, it gives every. Actually, here prati bodha means, what does the word bodha means? Literally, the word bodha means knowledge. But here Adishankara Bhagavatpada expects us to understand pratyayaha, bauddhaha pratyayaha uchyante. Bodha shabdena bauddhaha pratyayaha uchyante. Bauddhaha means what? No, is it? Pratyayaha means here, bauddhaha pratyayaha means the vrittayaha. The vrittis pertaining to knowledge are called bauddhaha pratyayaha, which means the vrittis as connected to buddhi, the knowledge. So the vrittihi. Vrittihi, what now? Antahkarana vrittihi. That is called thought modification. Before entering into this, the actual bhashyam, I have to make it very clear. Only then I can take you to the bhashyam. Let me present briefly what this mantra says here. See, there are vrittis, vrittayaha, the vrittis, the thought modifications keep on arising. There is a constant, continuous flow of vrittis which form the mind, isn't it? And now we have to take this flow of thoughts in the waking state. When do we have flow of thoughts? Continuously there's a flow of thoughts in the waking, also in the dream, isn't it? In dream state also there's a flow of thoughts. In waking also there's a flow of thoughts. In waking means what? From the moment you wake up until you fall asleep, throughout the waking state, there is a constant, continuous flow of thoughts in the mind. When I say the constant, continuous flow of thoughts in the mind, what, like how the each wave is part of the ocean, each vritti is part of the mind. All the vrittis, all the thought, Swamiji uses the word thought modifications, because they keep on modifying. They keep on arising. These vrittis, Shankaracharya says, these constantly, continuously flowing thoughts in the mind, as part of the mind, okay? As part of the mind, like waves arise continuously, mean what? Part of the ocean, isn't it? As part of the mind. These vritti, he is called bodha. First he says that. Then the question should come, are these vrittis, no? These vrittis inert or sentient? These vrittis which rise in the mind are insentient, inert. Why? Because the mind itself is what we have already studied. We have to remember Tattvabodha class again. What is mind made of? Mind is a product of sattvic aspect of five elements. Even though it is a product of sattvic aspect of five elements, still mind is what? Material product, elemental product. Isn't it? Therefore, and what is that mind itself is, we know very well, inert, insentient. Therefore, what about the vrittis which rise and resolve in the mind? As part of the mind, vrittis are also definitely inert and insentient. It is vrittis are inert and insentient. I'm only preparing you to understand the whole teaching. If vrittis are inert and insentient, they are not self-conscious. No thought modification. No thought is self-conscious. Therefore, they do not know themselves, nor do the vrittis know anything else, others also. Understand? They do not know themselves, they do not know others, means there is no self-consciousness on the part of thoughts. They do not have consciousness of their own. And therefore they cannot illumine, bring to light or know anything else also. Isn't it? This chair does not know it is a chair. Therefore this chair is what? This chair is incapable of knowing, oh, there's another chair, I know. This chair cannot know what else is here also. I explained this many times before. What is inertness, isn't it? So all the living beings are also inert. Non-living things are also inert, which means the living, the person who is alive, his body is also inert. Your finger does not know it's a finger. Your body does not know it's a body. So also the dead body also is what does not know it's a body. There's no difference. Isn't it? It's something which is very difficult for you to accept. Whether a thing is sentient or insentient, living or inanimate or inanimate, all the beings in the world are what? Equally inert. Which means it does not know its own existence. So when you define inertness, see, we have our own conscious beings, means we think they're all not inert. It's difficult for you to accept the conscious, for the conscious beings to be known as inert. How should you understand inertness? Anything which does not know its own existence is inert. Therefore, your own nail does not know that it is a nail, isn't it? Therefore, the whole physical body, all the organs in the body, everything is what? Inert only. That way, if you analyze, the whole universe is what? Inert only. That is why there is expression, jadaprapanchaha, jadaprapanchaha. So, the lion's body or elephant's body, anybody's body, isn't it? No particular organ or thing in the world knows its own existence. Therefore, everything has to be reduced to what? Jada prapanchaha. So, jadyam, inertness, is the nature of everything here. Therefore, now we come to our mind. That is what is more important for us. Only vrittis we are taking. So thoughts are inert because they are elemental product. Therefore, thoughts cannot know themselves, nor can they know others. Therefore, thought by itself cannot become knowledge. Is it clear now? Thought by itself cannot become knowledge. See, we have experience. We experience things only when you are conscious of things, isn't it? So we experience thoughts only we are conscious of thoughts, no? So thoughts, these thoughts, mere thoughts cannot become knowledge, which means any knowledge which rises in the mind is not a mere thought. You have to remember a Drik Drishya Viveka class. Knowledge or experience implies two aspects. One is what? Manifestation of consciousness. Or you can simply say consciousness plus vrittihi is equal to knowledge. So knowledge of being conscious. Only when you are conscious of the world, you are experiencing the world. For you to be conscious of something, to experience that, there must be consciousness. So experience is possible only when you're conscious of something, isn't it? And for experience is dependent on, or you have to be conscious of something to have experience. To be conscious of, there must be what? Consciousness. Isn't it? Therefore here, consciousness plus vrittihi together alone form the knowledge. So vrittihi, the knowledge, is not just mere vrittihi. Mere vrittihi is not knowledge. With consciousness alone, it is knowledge, which is called vritti jnanam. Vritti jnanam means what? Conventionally, when we say knowledge, which rises in the mind of any object, is vritti jnanam, which is vrittihi plus consciousness. So without the vrittihi, consciousness by itself is also, no? Even consciousness is without vrittihi also, there cannot be knowledge. Vritti without consciousness also cannot be knowledge. Now, this consciousness and vrittihi, so because of this association of vritti with the consciousness alone, is it? This vritti becomes what? Conscious sentient vrittihi. So all the vrittis become conscious sentient vrittihi. The entire mind becomes conscious sentient mind. Thereby each vritti becomes capable of illumining also. Is it illumining? The experience is possible. I experience the external world. I experience light, I hear the sound, I smell, taste, touch means form and color, light and taste, sound, touch, everything is inert here. They all shine only when? Only when these vrittis illumine them through the senses, isn't it? Therefore, without going too far, let us stay with the vrittis alone. And this vrittis and consciousness, how are they united? How are they mixed? Consciousness and the mind, the thoughts, vrittis, are inseparably united. Inseparably united. That is why there is a word in Kalidasa's verse, Vagartau Iva Sampruktau. They are inseparably united like the word and its meaning. Consciousness and matter, we say that. So here also what now? Consciousness and the power are inseparably united. Like Vagartau Iva, like the word and its meaning. Suppose we add water in the milk, or you add milk in the tea, can you separate afterwards? Of course you can separate. I put you some lime juice. That's a different thing. But still, without doing anything, inseparate. So they're inseparably united. And you have to remember here what, how they united, how this inert mind becomes conscious sentient mind. You have to remember an important lesson from Drigdrish Viveka. Do you remember now? Let me give you 2 minutes. Let me see whether you remember. How they are inseparably united. How the mind becomes conscious and sentient, borrowing sentiency from consciousness. There's an example given. Do you remember that? Crystal is always used an example for upadhi, dharma. Taptayav pindavate. Ayav pinda. Ayav pinda means what? Iron ball. Iron ball is now slowly recollecting. Iron ball is what? Iron ball is cold, black, dark. I shouldn't use the word black in this country. Iron ball is dark, cold. But that iron ball, if you put the iron ball in the fire, you burn it, then very, you know, highly heat and burnt iron ball becomes hot, blazing, brilliant fireball. Now you know, even though it can do, what the fire can do, like this iron ball also can do now. If you go and touch the burn, this is the fireball now, it can also cause boils, isn't it? Because it's also hot and brilliant. You can't touch it. Very hot. But you know very well, the heat and the brilliance, which are inseparably as part of the iron ball, do not belong to the iron ball. It belongs to fire. Even though it is hot and brilliant, it belongs to fire only. It's all old lesson I'm repeating today. I tell you, this is such a beautiful verse. I'm really waiting to this. But I cannot do it, proceed without doing, because Shankara goes, he takes very slowly here. I had to prepare you with these lessons, only then I can enter into the class, the actual class. Now, how beautifully he's saying, he's connecting this fourth verse to the third verse, isn't it? What sort of doubts might arise in the mind of a student after listening to the teaching of the third mantra? Then, which means he needs a method of arriving at Brahman without using the conventional process of objectification. Beautiful, isn't it? It's very important lesson to that, is the lesson. Therefore, for that which he is teaching this now. Just to say, invariably present in all the variable thoughts. Finished. Teaching is over. But that he slowly, step by step, how consciousness is invariably present in all the variable thoughts. How can you distinguish consciousness? Because physically consciousness and vrittis are inseparable. But cognitively distinguishable. So you have to, it's intellectually you have to filter the vritti and then you have to understand consciousness. When you understand consciousness, how are you understanding? Are you understanding consciousness as the object or as the very subject? Isn't it? Yes, what is the teaching? So for which he said, now, okay, how vritti, sabodaha. So vrittis by themselves cannot become the knowledge because they had to become conscious and sentient, is it? For them to become conscious and sentient, for them to be able to give experience, and then the consciousness is something borrowed, isn't it? Which means the consciousness is how consciousness is in the vritti is inseparably there. And then we have to remember that the sentence, taptayah pindavatu, they inseparably one with the consciousness, like the heated iron ball, inseparably with the fire. So that's why, just as this fireball, the iron ball borrows heat and brilliance from the fire, so also this inert mind borrows sentiency and consciousness from where? From consciousness. Then how the iron ball can burn things? So also the mind also is capable of knowing, illumining. Okay, now we have to take all the experiences here, isn't it? Now you know what is experiences. See, what is invariable, which means consciousness is invariably present in all the variable antahkarana vrittis. Because knowledge means what? Suppose knowledge of mic, knowledge of chair, knowledge of light, knowledge of flowers. In every piece of knowledge, vrittis are variables. Flower vritti comes, flower knowledge. Isn't it? Mic vritti comes, mic knowledge. Chair vritti comes, chair knowledge. Is it clear? Light vritti comes, light knowledge. Whatever vritti comes, that particular vritti is associated with the consciousness, becomes that knowledge. So flower vritti minus consciousness will be what? Nothing. Is it clear? Mic vritti minus consciousness will be what? Nothing. Mic vritti plus consciousness, mic jnanam, mic knowledge. There is mic. Because I experience mic. I experience mic, therefore I say there is mic. For the experience to be there must be vritti, isn't it? For the vritti, jnanam. For the knowledge to, is it, for the, but not just the vritti alone. For the knowledge to be there, vritti must be there, and vritti must have what? Must be associated with the consciousness. So the flower vritti goes, mic vritti comes. Mic vritti goes, chair vritti comes. Chair vritti goes, radiate vritti comes. Radiate vritti also goes, light vritti comes, sound vritti comes, car vritti comes, diamond jewelry celebration vritti comes. So too many vrittis come, but vrittis change. Variables. Is it? What is invariable? Isn't it? Consciousness. But how to arrive at that? Now, you have to understand here. Whenever I say the world is, I know this world. When I say there is world, what does it mean? I know this world. There is mic, I know this mic. When you say, I know this, these are flowers, which means I know they're flowers. Isn't it? Which means, I am is invariable in all the variables. The objects of experience are variables. What is invariable in all our experiences? I am. This method. I am is invariable in all the variable objects of experience. I know, I know, I know, I know. Isn't it? You have to really think correctly here. In every object of experience, I am is invariably there. How can there be an experience for you without you being there? So I am is invariable in all the variable experiences. நான் இருக்கிறேனுங்கிற அறிவு இல்லாம ஒரு அறிவு ஏற்பட முடியுமா, அனுபவம் இருக்க முடியுமா? வெரி இம்பார்ட்டன்ட், யூ மஸ்ட் பி தேர், யூ மஸ்ட் பி தேர். ஹம்ஜி சேஸ், வித்தவுட் யூ வாட் எக்ஸ்பீரியன்ஸ் இஸ் பாசிபிள்? How many experiences? You can see, you can talk about now countless number of experiences. They're all variable. Because they're variable, so you're able to have many also, isn't it? But what is invariable in all of them? I am. Anyway, what I say today, again, I'll make it much clearer in the next class. Therefore, and if you ask, what is this invariably present I am? Any number of experiences talk about, there is no experience which is without you, you being there, including a dream. No, I was not there, my dream alone was there. Isn't it? You can't say my television was program was going on but I wasn't watching. That is possible. Sometimes people turn on the television and then they fall asleep. Isn't it? But they can never say, I watched the television sleeping. They can never say that. So, you see, when you talk about something as a your experience, you must be there. Without your being there, no experience is possible. When you have any number of experiences, the objects vary, the experiences vary, isn't it? So, experience is what? Experience, knowledge means vrittihi plus consciousness is experience. If vritti plus consciousness is the experience or knowledge, what is invariable and what is variable? The experiences vary, it is okay. Why? Because the objects vary. But there you have to, what is that invariable? Isn't it? In all the variables, to arrive at it, you have to understand, I am is invariable. The objects of the experiences are variable, is it? Which means in every experience, the object is different, isn't it? The vritti changes. What is that which is there unchangingly, invariably? I am. What is it I am? I am that I which is invariably present in all the variable experiences is nothing distinct from the variable vrittis. And the distinct invariable, invariably present, non-variable, I is consciousness. Anyway, we have not seen that Bhashyam, okay? I had to tell you, make it clear for you before, because I can't talk about Taptaya Pindavatu here. I have to tell you only, then I have to take you here. I'm a little slow here because I don't mind. Because they say This is the method of arriving at Brahman. What meditation are you talking about for knowledge of Brahman? Don't need meditation. Don't need an action. Meditation is not said to be useless. Meditation is wanted. Meditation is prescribed by the Shastram. But we should understand what meditation is for. Not for knowing, not for arriving at Brahman, isn't it? Meditation is a mental activity. Action cannot, isn't it? Action cannot help you arrive at reality. You don't need to do any action to arrive at what the truth is. Meditation is a mental activity. You need knowledge, not the action. Even though meditation, you need to, Brahman, the reality, the truth is recognizable, available for recognition only in the mind. But it is, the recognition of reality is not dependent on mental activity. Called meditation. So what happened? Because reality is available for recognition in the mind. Not that reality is not anywhere else in the world. The whole jagat is reality only. But it is not recognizable anywhere. Because mind is the instrument of knowledge. Antahkaranam, inner instrument of knowledge. Therefore you have to, it is available, using the inner instrument of knowledge. Is it? You are not knowing through the mind or by the mind. You are using that instrument of knowledge. You are arriving at the reality in the very mind. See, if you say, I know the water by the ocean, means you are using the ocean as an instrument of knowledge. I am knowing water in the ocean as the truth of the ocean means what? Then ocean is not an instrument of knowledge, isn't it? As the very source of existence. Hope you are getting it, what I am saying. Therefore, we are not, because reality is available for recognition only in the mind as the invariably present consciousness in the variable thoughts. We are using the mind, we are in the mind, it has to be recognized. That does not mean mental activity will give you the knowledge of Brahman. So here we should also understand that doesn't mean we are belittling meditation. We are not really degrading, isn't it? We still value the meditation. Meditation is for what? For naischalyam, for disciplining the mind, for the restless, agitated mind to calm down. Meditation is the means. What meditation can do? The restless, agitated mind can become calm mind. That's all it can do. It's very important. So it's a preparate, for preparation alone you need meditation. Then again, what about contemplation then? Contemplation is possible only after you recognize the reality, isn't it? Without even knowing what the reality is, how can you dwell upon the reality? Isn't it? Therefore, contemplation, if you say meditation is contemplation, isn't it? Contemplation is the meditation. Then for contemplation, you need to know already what the reality is. Contemplation is not for knowing Brahman. Contemplation is for ascertaining your knowledge of Brahman, which you have already got, isn't it? Contemplation is a meditation for ascertaining the knowledge of Brahman which you already have. Not for gaining the knowledge of Brahman. But for gaining the knowledge of Brahman, is it? Contemplation is not the way. For meditation also is not the way. That's why study, understanding the subject matter of the Shastram is what? Understanding or knowing the Brahman. For the knowledge of Brahman, study the Shastram, Shravanam, Mananam. Nidhyasanam, contemplation is for ascertaining the knowledge you have gained, knowledge of Brahman you have gained through Shravanam and Mananam. Very clear? Therefore, what he wants to say here is, this method, because meditation means immediately you are, what no, trying to objectify Brahman. If you are using the meditation as a method, people mistake the contemplation for meditation, unfortunately not knowing what contemplation is. Is it clear? Therefore, here specifically this Patibodha Viditam Matam is extremely important mantra. Why? Because it negates any effort you make in terms of knowing Brahman as using the conventional process of objectification. Today, this much you remember. I am is invariable in all the variable experiences. Later on we'll see what is that invariably present I am. You can never separate the experiencer and the experience. Physically. You can never separate the dancer and the dance. Dancer is not the dance, but the dance is the dancer. No, there is no dance separately without the dancer. So there is no experience without the experiencer. Therefore, that experiencer is invariably present. I, the experiencer, is invariably present in all the experiences. Same thing we saw in Dakshinamurti Stotram also. These three states of experience, they're discontinuous. But what is continuously present is what? See, each state, it has to mutually, exclude also. Each state of experience has to exclude the other state of experience. All the three states of experience are mutually exclusive and discontinuous. But what is continuously unexclusively there. In all the threes you have experienced. You have already seen that. Now you have to take only the waking state experiences. There you analyze all the three. You take only waking state experience. Only in Jagrat Avastha, from the moment you wake up till the moment you go fall asleep, all your experiences are nothing but Antahkarana Vritti Jnanam only. Antahkarana Vrittayaha. Now the question comes. Consciousness and the vrittis. With this I'll stop. Consciousness and the vrittis. What is dependent on what? Is consciousness dependent on the vrittis? Yes. Consciousness is dependent on vrittis. Antakarna vrittis. For what? Not for existence, but for manifestation. But the vrittis are dependent on consciousness even for being, even for illumination, even for being illumined. Even for existence through the illumination, isn't it? So the antahkarna vrittis are dependent on consciousness, i.e. the consciousness for the existence, for the very existence through the illumination. Whereas consciousness is not dependent on vrittis for existence, but consciousness is dependent on vrittis for manifestation. But only when the vrittis arise, consciousness can become manifest. Only if consciousness becomes manifest, vrittis also become illumined. They are mutually, they are contributory, isn't it? Mutually supportive. Only then experience is possible. Is it clear? Therefore, we don't need to go to whole Jagat in search of the truth. Just analyze what this knowledge or experience is. Experience is not one. Three states of experience. Of the three states also, leave the deep sleep state. Take the dream. Leave the dream also. Just take only the waking state. In waking state, how many experiences you have? Each experience is what? Vritti Jnanam. Very quick, because so many, how many vrittis arise in your mind? Countless. Keep on changing. Very quick. But I tell you, in each experience of each, isn't it? Because one has to vary for the other vritti to be there quickly. And what is invariably present in all the vrittis? I am. All, that's why you say my experiences. You cannot know the truth by analyzing others' experiences. So we just not break our head like that. Okay, my experiences means, where is my? How can it be my if you are not there? There cannot be experience without you. So what is that invariably present I in all the variable experiences? That he is going to explain very beautifully in this mantra. We'll see the Shankara's commentary also. Shankara takes off like a very beautifully, he's taking it off. Bodha shabdena bauddhaha pratyaha uchyante. The vritti is pratyaha, he means the vritti. The vritti is associated with the buddhi, intellect, which means the knowledge. Those vrittis are said to be known by the term bodha. Sarve pratyaha vishayi bhavanti yasya saha atma. Sarve pratyaha means what? All these vrittis, all these thoughts, vishayi bhavanti become the objects of knowledge. Thoughts become the object of knowledge for whom? That is Atma, the Self. If you ask, no? You, I can say, I, the Atma, the one for whom all the thoughts are objects of knowledge. Vishayi bhavanti. Even thoughts are objects of knowledge. Thoughts are objects of knowledge for whom? For you. I. Okay. Saha Atma, let me stop there. Why? Because, let me start the next class. Because it's very, I had to take a lot of time to explain things. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.